Call our development director at 713-526-4000 to join KPFT's major donor program. KPFT is indispensable, but we need you to keep our blood pumping. This is KPFT Houston, Texas.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
The show.
Welcome to Technology Bites. No, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groove House.
I thought you were David. Dave.
I have been David, but Dave, right now Dave's not
Dave's
here.
Not here.
You look a lot more conservative than you did the last time I saw you.
After in Dwight's recent heart. Appearance on Fox
Give
News.
Me some misinformation.
That's really why you're not going to make it through the whole show, because you went from Fox News in the morning to KPFT at night.
I'm versatile.
Wow.
That is nuts.
I hadn't thought about it in that light. But
yeah, you're right. Twisted. You're just conflicted.
Political compass is jet-lagged.
I'm conflicted.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. I don't know what Flicted was working on exactly.
He's still working on it.
Was it for what we're trying to do, getting Pete on the show, or is this for some other project?
It's all like updating software. You know, it's good to update everything before you go on air.
It's a little project, I think.
Yeah, on KPFT's connection.
Yes.
Well, you know, our philosophy is, if it ain't fixed, break it. Or something.
So long as you do it with laser focus.
Yeah, so we don't want to come in here to the radio station to do Technology Bites and come off with too much competence or anything. So we have to have a few hiccups here and there. It's a time-honored tradition of Technology Bites.
That's so right.
We're working on getting Pete in on the Skype. You know, it's really Pete's fault. Ultimately, it's Pete's fault because he has just time and again refused to move back to Houston.
Or just drive here every Wednesday.
Or just drive here on Wednesdays. Yeah.
Take the bullet train.
No one's got to move.
The bullet train. You can take the mega bus or something. Come on. I don't know. It's only a couple of bucks.
The mega bus.
The mega bus. You know the mega bus?
Mega nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah, it leaves. The last mega bus leaves around 8 o'clock.
Oh. Well, you kind of have to leave a day before. So you have to
come out
on Tuesday, stick around, and catch the next one in the morning on Thursday. So it's a minor commitment of time. All right. Well, we got Pete. Yay. All right. So visit us online, geekradio.com. That is where we have all the precious, precious information about the show. You can catch the stream. You can get all the announcements, like the fact that the Geek Gathering is happening this Friday.
Yes!
Dwight is very happy. Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
He knows there's going to be free finger foods.
He's hoping there's going to be.
Oh,
free
you have food. A line on it? You
it's
know?
Not, well, no. They no, usually he just, have some art thing, but that's not it. I just love that place. Finger food or no. I love it.
It's been a cool space, and even when they have another Cones. Event going on there Cones. With the pretty people.
Cones.
Yeah, it is the best place for if you have not been to a geek gathering, these geek gatherings at cons are the ones to come to. They're excellent.
Unless it rains.
It's not going to rain.
I heard yes, Dwight will be bringing all of his new friends, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh. These will be Dwight's guests at the show.
Yeah, right.
All right.
It's supposed to be sunny Friday.
Friday evening.
Sun, yes.
Well, okay. We have the geek gatherings at night.
Right.
Well, still, I said Friday. There's no Fry night.
I have my geek gatherings at night. Yeah.
Fry night.
Yes. Well, the weather's supposed to be clear. It's supposed to get a little cool, so they'll be going inside and coming outside and going back inside, and then there'll be the highly coveted tower of fire that everybody hunkers down under. So yeah, come to the geek gathering on Friday. That'll be awesome. And visit online. You can also hang out IRC, irc.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bites.
I'm going to bring a bowl of nuts just for Dwight.
Are you?
So you can have some finger foods.
Well, there may be finger foods.
Why don't you bring some arts?
Some arts?
what I wish is that you'd bring a food truck. I'd love to have a food truck pull up and feed us at the...
Can Dwight single-handedly finance?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if
people would eat it.
I mean, they want...
Depends on what it is, you know.
It doesn't.
Rice box. I'd love to see, like, the rice box.
I think it depends on whether or not you would eat it.
That's true. I wouldn't eat, like, from that peanut butter and jelly truck.
That's mean.
Can you use your celebrity pole to get you just a food truck for Friday?
Why don't you make a video of somebody blowing up a cat or something?
Okay, I'm on it.
Wow. PB&J.
Well, he's hating.
He's hating.
So basically, if a food truck showed up with one dish that Dwight liked, they could make a few bucks and move on to someplace where they would actually...
Well, I think other people might eat it, too.
I don't think so. I don't have that sense.
Like Bernie's Burger Bus showed
up? I do not have that sense.
Really?
I don't have that sense.
A lot of people go out and, like, they go to, you know, or they go to Lazy Brawl.
People like to sit, you know, sit down in a warm place and have food. I just don't get the sense that a food... I mean, prove me wrong. Invite one out. But, you know, if there's like, a minimum that you have to guarantee...
Yeah, yeah. You know, a lot of them, they want some kind of sales. I want to make sure they're going to make some kind of sales.
I mean, even...
You can't just sell one burger.
Let's just say at a geek gathering, we have 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
And
we usually have more than that.
Well, it's been roughly averaging about 20 people. Mm-hmm. So let's just say 10% of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's two people.
But then you also have all the people there who are eating the finger food inside, you know. So.
If there's finger foods, they're not going to want to go out.
If there's free food, then there's no hope for the food truck.
For between your house and Cajones, I'm sure there's plenty of places you can stop and grab something.
There are. But okay. I just like the idea of, hey, you know, it's the geek gathering food truck. So I like that.
Yes.
Bring a grill.
That's a great idea. I have a George Foreman grill. I have a George. We'll do salmon burgers
out of the back of your car. There we go.
The health department will show up for that.
Plug that into your Prius.
That's right.
Oh yeah. What about the vitals?
The vitals. We've been giving out the vitals. IRC, Geek Gathering website. We're done.
We're done.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the Facebook.
Flickr. All that
stuff. If you go to Geek Radio, you'll pretty much get it all, I guess. All right. So let's go to San Antonio. We're going to San Antonio.
Take the bullet train.
What was that?
What?
Oh. He's I unplugged the
technical difficulties.
Yeah.
Flicked is looking distracted.
I'm trying to get
ice, baby.
Yeah, it might be, might or might not be working. I can't play it over my iPhone, and since my computer's being used for it, I don't want to create a sound loop.
Got it. All right. Well, take it away, InfoShot.
It's the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
On February 25th, this week, the copyright alert system came on. It's also known as Six Strikes. It kicked off on the 25th with the cooperation of five major internet service providers, AT&T, Cablevision, Verizon, Time Warner Cable, and Comcast are all participating ISPs. It's backed by White House. So, essentially, let's see, the group managing the program, the Center for Copyright Information, objective is to educate downloaders that they are infringing on protected intellectual copyrights. The CAS has been in the works since 2011 and was scheduled to go into effect last November, but after a series of delays, including reluctance from ISPs and Hurricane Sandy, the Center for Copyright Information postponed the launch until this year. They call it graduated response. Everybody else calls it six strikes. Basically, entertainment companies notify a participating ISP. The customer has allegedly been pirating movies or TV shows illegally. The bandwidth provider will then send a notice and educate the customer about the consequences of downloading unauthorized content. Then the ISP is supposed to gradually ratchet up the pressure on the customer for the warnings. Eventually, after six warnings, ISPs could choose to suspend service. Graduated response, however, does not include the termination of service. Customers wrongfully accused can appeal to their company and take their case to an arbitration group for review. The plan doesn't protect internet consumers from being sued by copyright owners, however, so don't think you're off the hook on that one. Some ways of private material, pirated material shared on the internet, like cyber lockers, attachments, Dropbox folders, are not included under six strikes. But you know, you can understand because you know this could really affect their business. Meanwhile, in other news, music sales have had the biggest jump in 14 years. Oops. Basically, piracy is going down largely because it's the song you want without being a thief. Quote, the music industry has adapted to the internet world, learned how to meet the needs of consumers, monetized the digital marketplace, unquote, according to IFPI executive Francis Moore. Two reports released Tuesday proved the point and should make musicians and the executives who profit from their work very happy. The IFPI Digital Music Report shows the global record industry grew in 2011 by 0.3%, only 0.3%, but still, an increase is an increase, and this was the biggest jump since 1998. Another report by the NPD Group reported that use of peer-to-peer services to download music declined 17% in 2012. Somebody who was going to be snarky might say that maybe it means that everybody who wanted to pirate stuff already has got it, and there isn't that much new music, so the amount of pirating has gone down. But that would only be sarcastic would say that, so I won't. In other news, a U.S. District Court has upheld an earlier judgment which awarded Vernet X over $368 million in its patent infringement lawsuit against Apple. This was according to Seeking Alpha. Apple has been denied a request for a new trial and must, moreover, pay Vernet X $330,211 per day until royalties and other details are settled. The two parties have 45 days to come to their own royalty minute before Justice Ames. Now, this case came out of East Texas, which is the place where people go to file copyright stuff. So there's this backwater part of East Texas. All these giant intellectual property cases get filed. And this time, apparently, I don't know if it means we have, you know, since the district court upheld it, it may mean that there's something there, but it sure sounds like patent trollery. Basically, in November 2011, Internet X claims that Apple's FaceTime feature violates VPN concepts that they own. They've made similar complaints against Cisco and NEC. It's also filed a second lawsuit against Apple, newer hardware, the allegations, saying the iPhone 5, 5th generation iPod Touch, 4th generation iPad, the iPad Mini, and newer computers have also implicated. So it looks like they have to pay for them. At some point, you'd think if a copyright troll or patent troll was going to be successful enough, it'd be easier for these big companies to just buy them and grind them up. Anyways, but so we'll keep an eye on that one, see if more trollery works. And while we're being all, while we're talking about, let's see, piracy and patent trolls and all that other stuff, interesting report obtained by The Verge says analysts from Florida-based internet security firm Simru have uncovered a massive foreign hacking enterprise that has somehow managed to steal more than a terabyte of data per day. Confirmed targets include military and academic facilities, in addition to a major search engine, among others. While the report doesn't name any potential suspects, Simru director Steve Santorelli acknowledged the group almost certainly had to be state-supported, describing the crime as, quote, internet theft on an industrial level. You know, this comes after the allegations of Chinese cyber. But as The Verge notes, it could be any one of a dozen countries behind the attacks, which is part of the problem. I'm grabbing all the headlines. The experts interviewed for the story say the threat to intellectual property and internet infrastructure is much broader than a single country. According to an analyst, researchers, our networks are attacked every day by an assortment of digital desperados, electronic spy masters, and terrorist groups. So the end of the article says, so with these attacks happening on such a massive scale, nothing short of major government intervention can turn around our cyber defense problem at this point. Although by now, and this is the scary part, it may already be too late. So, you know, if you're in a position to know something or do something about this at a major company, you may want to be sure that these articles are getting forwarded up to the food chain, up the food chain, so that they can make some decisions on how to, I don't know, secure their stuff. But instead, we'll give a 6-strike rule for if you downloaded a movie or a TV show, right? another bad news, if you have iOS, there's the second lock screen bypass exploit discovered recently. There was originally a bug that found one that would give you access to information on a phone through where you could get around the lock screen. Now a second bug has been discovered that gives access to contacts, photos, and more. Vulnerability uses a similar method as the one disclosed previously, although apparently it gives more access to more user data when the phone is plugged into a computer. Mac Rumors and Kaspersky's threat post say the exploit involves manipulating the phone's screenshot function, its emergency call function, and its power button. Now, on the phone, no matter what, you can make an emergency call on the phone, but then you can cancel it. The trick is you cancel it while toggling the power on and off to get temporary access to the phone. A video posted by the group shows a user flipping the phone's voicemail list and contacts list while holding down the power button. From there, an attacker can get the phone screen to turn black before it can be connected to a computer via a USB cord. Then the device's photos, contacts, and such will be available directly from the device hard drive without the PIN to access it. Apple is expected to fix the lock screen bug in iOS 6.1.2, but that small release fixed a different bug. Instead, it appears a fix for at least one of the lock screen vulnerabilities will be coming in iOS 6.1.3, currently in the hands of developers. So the main thing is keep your hands on your phone. Even if you have the lock screen set up, can't count on it being secure. And now on new stuff, more happy, fun stuff. You know, there's been flexible batteries that we've talked about, but they're not that great usually being tugged on and stretched and stuff. But a team up between Northwestern University and the University of Illinois could give lithium-ion batteries extreme elasticity with very few of the drawbacks you'd expect. Make it stretchable. Researchers built electrode interconnects from serpentine metal wires that have even more wavy wires inside. The wires don't require much space for normal use, but will unfurl in an ordered sequence as they're pulled to their limits. The result is a prototype battery that can expand to 3 times its normal size, but can still last for 8 to 9 hours. It could also charge wirelessly, and thus wearable under the skin as well as over. Imagine fully powered implants where an external battery is impractical or unsightly. There's no word yet on whether there will be refined versions of the product, but it would be pretty cool to have stretchable electronics that have good batteries in. And that's the news.
All right. Little choppy there tonight. Unfortunately, we had 2 calls come in and let us know that the quality was really bad, so we apologize for that.
Yeah, I know there's a lag.
Yeah.
And the sound coming back from you, which usually is really clear, rough.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll see if we can come up with another solution. We're going to keep trying to fine-tune it, but we need our news. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air, not if you want to call and tell us how bad that was. We already got the message. 713-526-KPFT to be on the air with Technology Bites. Dwight, the Prius expert, is standing by to take your questions. If you want to know why Prius drivers drive the way they do, Dwight has the answer, and he will tell it to you.
If you really want to hear it, or you can just go read it on my blog.
Not while driving a Prius.
Not while driving, though. No.
All right. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse is fielding a call right now. So we are waiting to see who that will be. You were out last week, Barrett. Why was that?
Work.
Work.
It just actually, that whole thing took a week, and it just kind of wrapped up today. I worked till like 4 in the morning that night, and on the way home, I got not one flat tire, but 2 on 610. And then, of course, my tires, I had to, like, special order them. So I was, like, actually waiting at the shop today on the car, and they didn't finish it in time because there was a huge, apparently, everyone wanted to get their tires changed today. So it's a long week. A lot of, I think I worked 2 days straight at one point. It's like reporting system code stuff that wasn't quite working, data from a whole lot of sources, and it just kind of came down to us to get it going. Yay, don't go into IT.
Avoid IT if you can help.
Avoid IT.
All right, 713-526-5738. Groovehouse is still screening a call. We had 2 coming in, but it looks like that other person didn't want to be on the air, so we are taking some calls in. Is this the mobile hotspot?
That is the mobile hotspot.
I may want to.
Oh, although I'm finally getting, after like 3 months of no broadband whatsoever at home, aside from like some 4G goodness, yeah. Comcast finally agreed that there was a house where I said there was a house. Like, they keep, I've had to call in like several times. They can't find my service address because it's a new building. And they'll say, hey, we've got to email a group. But the group that they email, there's no way to have a ticket in the system. So there's no way to record anything that goes on. So this has been going on for the better part of 2.5-3 months. I'll call every 2 weeks. They'll say, hey, it takes us 2 weeks to get back. I promise I'll call you back. Finally, one guy called me back. He said he was going through some old email and he found the email back from them and he remembered me and called me. But this was like, I think I didn't start keeping track until about 2 guys ago, but this was pretty early on, he found the stuff. So they're coming out Friday, you know. So
assuming
I'll
they can find your house.
Presuming they can find the house. I've given them very detailed directions. I've left nothing to chance. So I'm going to get
put
broadband.
Tie some little balloons on the mailbox.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to tie balloons on me to welcome the Comcast guy when he comes in. But, yeah, I'll get it just in time to leave and go to the Geek Gathering, which is awesome. I'll leave
so
new
won't
broadband
be seeing
for that.
You at the Geek Gathering.
But that's what I'm saying. I will. Broadband will not be seeing me. Well, the service window is from 10 to noon. So surely by, you know, 7:15, 7 o'clock, he would have come.
You know? Hope.
I hope. I don't have a couch you can sleep on, so.
Only if you count on it. Yeah, well, and then you're going to go out in your car and have 5 flat tires.
5 flat tires.
Oh, ouch.
All right, 713-526-5738. 713 526-KPFT if you want to be on the air. We've got a lot of open lines. We've got one call in the queue that we're about to bring on the air. But we got open lines if you want to be on the air with us at 713-526-KPFT. Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up?
All right. Up first on the show, we are going to speak with Mark.
Mark, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. I really didn't get the news. It was really choppy. But what I wanted to know about is this new six strike thing.
Yeah.
On the internet, you know, I don't have a TV, and basically all I do is watch YouTube for news and stuff like that.
Well, if you're watching YouTube, you're fine because YouTube is not file sharing. That's content that's put up onto the YouTube by different users. So there's no, the way that they monitor that is they check for copyrighted material and they just remove
it. They'll pull it off YouTube, yeah.
They'll take it off. But you, if you watch something on YouTube and it's copyrighted, you're not going to get dinged for that. You would get dinged if you put something on YouTube.
They're looking for torrents, you downloading things, and maybe some of the streaming sites that are on the fringe, but I would assume it's mainly just file sharing.
It's file sharing, but also a lot of peer-to-peer, including BitTorrent, is used for legitimate uses. In fact, some movie studios actually have authorized distribution through BitTorrent. So looking for particular hashes.
They're going to do deep packet inspection is what they're going to do. But the problem is some of the company that wrote a lot of the software that they're going to be using has a really bad track record for writing solid software. So yeah, false positives get you in trouble.
But for the caller's benefit, no, you're not going to be taking any hits for
but
that.
But doesn't this sound absolutely crazy to you?
No.
Hollywood that's doing it. That's not crazy.
It doesn't sound crazy because I do think that they're, you know, that people do go to the internet, download whatever they can find, you know, pop music, pre-release movies, whatever. And they think, and this is something that I struggle with because I put copyrighted content onto the web, and people think that if it's on the web or it's on the internet, that it's free and it's okay. And they think that they're behind they're behind the anonymity of their computer and they're not going to get caught, so they just keep doing it. And there are other people that they just don't know that what they're doing actually is illegal. So the idea behind this, and you know, for good or for ill, the idea behind it is to educate people to say, look, you're pulling these files down. We want to let you know that they're copyrighted and you shouldn't be doing it. Watch this video, learn about copyright, educate yourself. So it doesn't sound crazy to me. It sounds, it actually sounds like an idea whose time has come.
The alternative was what the MPAA and the RIAA was doing, which was suing individual people that they could catch downloading the stuff. This is kind of what they're going to do instead. They've solicited the help of the major ISPs, and you won't get your access cut off, although if you keep doing it, they'll slow it down unusable.
What Dwight was mentioning is there have been cases where people have been downloading copyrighted material and the RIAA, as representing the companies that own the copyright, have sued the people who've downloaded it. Now, that's tricky because I've heard from people who say, well, my niece or my nephew has been over the house, but I'm getting the letter because it's my internet connection. So it's pretty
Or their Wi-Fi is open and some random person that they don't even know who it is.
But it's rather indiscriminate, and it can be very intimidating and confusing to get a letter in the mail saying you're being sued for copyright infringement.
Right. I understand that. I still think it's a lot of Big Brother. I understand the copyright. I think we need a discussion on what copyright is in these times. I'm just wondering what it's going to do to, like, Wi-Fi, people that provide Wi-Fi in open environments.
Well, I think that is definitely going to come under scrutiny because people that share out their internet connection free of charge and to anybody who uses, you know, anybody who shops at their stores, like at a coffee shop, they provide internet access to whoever drinks coffee at the coffee shop. Those people could use the internet for who knows what, and the only way they could only trace it as far as the coffee shop.
Right.
So I've always thought that there needs to be some kind of accountability for how internet is used. If I was running a business, I would have a hard time justifying providing free internet access to everyone just because unless I had some way of monitoring who was using it and be able to tie the activity to them.
Right, but I don't think Starbucks and people like that, they almost expect that when you go there that you're going to have free Wi-Fi, Barnes & Noble, whatever.
You can do that, but you can also still block, for instance, the ports that Kevel, excuse me, the ports that, you know, carry BitTorrent traffic or, you know, whatever else. You can just say, hey, I just want to let web traffic and just like only inbound email and only this and only that. So you're going to have to be smarter about it, I think.
Right. I mean, having a wide open free internet access at a public space
probably is not a good thing to do. I know at my work, if I go to a website that's streaming or anything like that, I get this big warning message that pops up that you're at an illegal site. So,
I a lot of companies are trying to, they're just trying to protect their business and trying to protect their network as well. Yes, Big Brother, we can talk Big Brother. Every bit of information that you put out on the internet is susceptible to being intercepted by who knows who, whether it's the government or whether it's individuals or some corporation or what. Your information is subject to, and there's not really any way to police that or to stop that except for encrypting your information. You can.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't use BitTorrent a whole lot. Are there BitTorrent clients that do encryption?
Yeah, there are. Even
well, the client will supports encryption, and there's also proxies. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just have a big problem with the structure of the RCC or whatever they are colluding with the distributors of the internet working together. I'm more for individual. I'm not going to say I'm an anarchist, but well, maybe I am. So that's what kind of bugs me about this. I think we need a larger discussion about what copyright is.
So you're an anarchist up to the point where, you know, a group or an organization has successfully built the internet and makes it work.
Right.
But then free reign for everybody, you know, everybody else gets to just use it any way they want.
Right. Well, you know, I'm an artist too, and people have stolen my stuff, but I never made money as an artist, so if someone stole my stuff, it's like, okay.
Well, you're certainly not going to make money if people are stealing it and using it
for free. Right. Well, the whole music business really needs to be redefined in today's age, and I think the artists are doing that. But anyway, that's my 50 cents for tonight.
Appreciate the call, Mark. Thanks. I think education is the key. That's one of the most encouraging things I've seen about this is just educating people.
Educating people to use encrypted BitTorrent clients.
Yeah, tell them how to run
around. So that they don't know what they're getting.
If you're going to break the law, then you should learn how to get away with it if you're going to do that. But I think my point is that people don't necessarily realize they're breaking the law. And when you present to them the idea that they're breaking the law, the first thing they do is they tend to get defensive and then justify it. Well, you know, because that's what happens. I mean, as a photographer who puts my content out on the web, I've had my images stolen and I've talked to people. I've gone after them. I've approached them. And some people was like, well, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I had no idea. And other people said, you know, bite me. You know, you put it on the internet. What did you expect? Go to hell. And then I've had other people that have said, you know, I didn't know, and I understand because I'm an artist and I want to pay you for it. But people need to be educated, so that's what I think this is doing.
They could have done more PSAs before they hit with the legislation, though. I mean, they did some stuff when Napster was kind of big, but it was over the top and it was poorly done.
But
it
even
was funny.
No, they still do stuff. I mean, they have all the pre-rolls on the movies where, you know, would you shoplift?
I think
would
those
you
are over
steal
the top.
From somebody's purse? Well, that's what you're doing. Help
well,
us out.
But people think that, well, if they can afford to make that kind of ad, then they can afford for me to steal their product.
Well, if they can afford to have all of the ISPs watch your traffic and send you messages, that also indicates the same thing.
I know. Well, you know, that's the justification.
Well, the deal is the internet was set up to route around what it sees as trouble or failure or things like that. So if this gets in the way, I think people are going to find a way around it. Stuff will just go more underground where you actually have to know what you're doing to find the good stuff, which is fine.
Well, that's still kind of the way it is. I mean, every time something comes along that's easy and it gets too saturated.
It gets ruined is what happens,
So
it's like hipster culture.
Internet hipster culture.
You know, once it gets too common and everybody knows about it, you got to move on.
All right,
not cool anymore.
I don't think we should tell anyone anything else about computers. We need to lock this down. Too many people are using computers today. It's not.
This show is no longer officially about
computer.
Teaching people about technology. We are now about misinformation.
We have always been at war with the RIAA. Double plus ungood. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we are going to speak with David.
David.
Hi.
You're on the air with us. What's up?
I had a question about Houston.
It's a city in Texas. Fourth largest in the nation. What else?
When I visited New York City, I was surprised to find how many gadgets, stores, and, you know, technology. There was just a huge break, a price break in metropolitan areas. But Texas doesn't, you know, despite being recession-proof, doesn't seem to have the same kind of technology mecca going on.
Are you talking about the cheap electronics stores that are all over Manhattan?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, a lot of those are selling things that aren't necessarily...
the gray market,
Yeah, a lot of that stuff is gray market or is... Or even counterfeit.
Yeah.
So you know, if you
or misleadingly labeled,
right? Yes. Or misleadingly
that's
labeled.
That's the ongoing joke about the New York electronics stores is that they'll sell you Sony, they'll have
Sony like, with two N's.
Yeah. There's a lot of counterfeit there. There's a lot of stuff that's acquired from questionable sources. It's not, gray market's a real big problem. You see that on eBay a lot,
right?
Where something is produced, shipped to America, but where if it's produced in China, other people can buy it for a discount and try to sell it.
Now there are a handful of big name stores like that, like B&H Electronics
is out there.
That's legit. But I would say probably that at least half of the ones that you see throughout New York are questionable.
If you're talking about discounted, like what, iPhones, laptops, what?
Well,
exactly?
Specifically, I love to work out, and I'm looking for a wristwatch that will track my workouts with my heart rate, and even something like, I don't know, what do they call it, like a speedometer, a velocity meter.
Timex
like
has one, yeah.
Because, my workouts involve a lot of, you know, like moving around and spinning.
Okay, well, so you think that Houston is gouging you for that device as opposed to New York?
Well, it's just that everywhere I go, you know, I can go to the Galleria and ask for that and people haven't heard of it.
You know, diversity is different.
Upload my heart rate to Facebook.
All right. Well, talking about the availability, whether or not you can find something here and not find something here that you can find in New York, that's a whole different ball game right there. Yes, there may be some leading edge technology or some more obtuse or obscure technology that you will find in these shops in New York that you won't find here. We don't have that kind of, like a sharper image for poor people down here.
Well, note is that Houston is one of the fattest cities in America, and so, you know,
so your
if you're
workout
looking for exercise-related stuff, you know, this may not be the city to find it in. And definitely don't go to San Antonio because it's even worse.
And, you know, there's this thing called the Internet, and when you go on the Internet, there are places where you can buy things that you can't get in Houston.
Yeah, if you want shady merchandise that's,
cheaper. Shop Amazon.
No, I can't shop on the Internet. Everything just... falls apart.
Well, check out the Nike.
Not literally. I mean, just the deal falls apart before the gadget
Nike Fuel Band. That's the one you want to get. If I'm hearing what you do is when you want to track programs. Like
yeah, but where would he get
going.
It and use it? Because he doesn't want to buy it on the Internet.
Well, that's one of those things. It's super hackable. I would try running stores. Like maybe go to Luke's Locker or try any of the triathlete stores. They're
so there's an idea.
Like
instead of going to the watch store, go to the fitness store.
Go to the fitness store, yeah.
And Apple sells it.
Yeah, and Apple sells it?
Store sells it.
So there you go.
Yeah, I guess there's no price gouging going on at the Apple stores.
Not at all.
Well, it's not price gouging, but Apple's not going to...
Apple sells list.
Yeah, you know, those are solutions that I haven't tried yet, and I appreciate your guys' input. I'm sure that you have a lot more experience with this kind of question than I have.
Well, I mean, good luck in finding the watch. I mean, I think it's out there, and I think Internet shopping is still a viable option for you. If you go to legitimate sites, I mean... Amazon is a great place to buy electronics, surprisingly. I've bought two cameras from Amazon, and it's been a great experience. And the review system lets you know if you can find the product, find if it does what you want it to do, and then order it, and you get it for a good price too.
Yeah, I've been reading reviews on Amazon, and they seem, how do I say this? I kind of want more from the internet reviews. I want to search and find something that's exactly the application that I'm looking for. I mean, since it is the whole global community, I would expect at least one person to have reviewed it the way I want to hear.
That also depends on how widely purchased the item is. I've gone to Amazon on stuff that a lot of people buy, and there's tons of reviews that's super helpful. I've also gone and looked for things that are a little bit more off the beaten path. And if that seller doesn't sell enough of them to actually get somebody to go back and write a review about it, they're just not going to get the review. That being said, you can take the make and model of anything, plug it into Google, and search for it, and you will find review after review after review. And if you can't find something online that tells you whether or not something you're interested in is good or bad, then move on to the next thing. But I'm not buying that it's not out there. This conversation started off with why does New York have what Houston doesn't have, and it's kind of degenerated from there. And, if you want something and you're willing to put in the time and the effort to research it, you'll find it. It's out there. And it's amazing what you can buy online and with great confidence. I've bought, high-end electronics, all the way down to just little adapters and stuff that I've needed, I can buy online. And I don't think it takes that much internet or tech savvy to do it. But maybe that's just me.
I bought a couple of large televisions, flat screens. Online.
I've been checking out Slick Deals, which they publish.
It's a good place.
They publish really interesting deals that you can find when somebody's discounting something or offering free shipping or financing or something.
I also just bought the 63-disc.
63-disc what?
63-disc.
Star Trek collection?
Complete, complete Columbia collection of Johnny Cash.
Wow.
Seriously?
Every album he put out. Every album he put out on wow. Columbia.
Well, today, was it today or yesterday, Johnny Cash Day?
Yesterday was his birthday, yeah.
Is that when you got it?
Yeah.
Is this brand new?
No, it's been out since, I think, September.
He fell into it.
But the MSRP was $320, and the price has gone down some, and then a place put it on sale for his birthday. And it still wasn't probably the best price, but I just didn't feel like scrounging around and keeping looking for a long time to save 15 or 20 bucks. So.
That's a lot of Johnny Cash.
Yep.
Are you gonna digitize
it? I've already got like probably 2.5 days of nonstop, non-repeat Johnny Cash. So yeah, this will definitely take it up another level.
Are you gonna digitize
it? Is that the one that has the recording of the sleep apnea study too?
He did a lot of albums that were kind of thematic. So who knows what all's in there?
Well, there's all the gospel stuff, right?
Yeah,
and the country stuff,
novelty stuff, kids. Stuff,
novelty
religious
stuff. Oh, like the Rod Lincoln kind of stuff.
They call him the Streak.
That was not Johnny Cash. Okay.
Novelty.
That was Ray Stevens.
Ray Stevens is the novelty Johnny Cash, though. All right. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
All right. Up next, we are going to speak with Joseph.
Joseph, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
We're having some break-ins in our neighborhood, and what we're kind of hoping to do is maybe get like a laptop that we can carry to somebody's house or close to it, and maybe set up maybe a few wireless cameras that we could set up either powered or on battery or whatever. We can handle that, but what we don't know about is what kind of cameras to get, and the specs on them, and maybe anything specific about a laptop. Maybe if we could use a Linux laptop, or if we have to buy Windows, we could do that. But I was kind of wondering what your recommendations would be for doing a little temporary mobile wireless security cameras and a system to monitor it might be.
I think Windows will give you the widest variety of cameras that you can use just because a lot of them work with specific pieces of software, and as far as I've seen, the widest number of pieces of software for camera control, they run under Windows.
Right, you're going to need hardware that has driver support, so that's going to primarily be Windows.
Yeah, if you go to Mac, it drops a lot. I'm sure if you try to do it in Linux, it's probably going to drop a lot.
Okay, so if we go ahead and do it in Windows 7 or whatever,
Yeah, you do Windows 7, and you shop around for. I mean, they're sold in kind of packages, I would imagine. Or
there's,
you could
there's
do some...
tons of different kinds. I mean,
okay. Yeah. And what would the laptop need to be as far as horsepower, disk space, or stuff like that?
Well, are you going to record the video?
Yeah, if we could, because we may end up recording it maybe over a day or two or something.
We're going to need something with some storage space.
Well, a lot of the software has a lot of the software for those has like where you can define hotspots.
Right, and do motion detection.
So you can do motion detection, right. And then you can either record X number of seconds, and you can also record like a still image every X number of seconds, stuff like that. So, but yeah, I mean, your storage could get big, especially if you're actually recording all of that. I mean,
well, depends on how many camera feeds, too. I mean,
well, the other thing is that you can there's a lot of like prepackaged sets you can get where it's got like four cameras, and it feeds into a aggregator that splits the screen into four, and so you've got four feeds into one actual view, and then you can record those to hard drive or whatever. But
yeah, I mean, sure, we'll probably start with one camera, but. I just want to make sure it would probably be expandable that we could put maybe two or more on there. But
well, if I've not set up one of these things, but I mean, you're going to pay extra for wireless gear.
Yeah, I figure that.
You're going to have to, because basically what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to set up an access point inside.
And depending on the camera quality, like the video quality.
Each camera is going to connect to the Wi-Fi access point, and then you're going to have a place where all of those video streams are sent to. Over the internet to a server that's going to receive them.
Because I've done it, but I was using a Mac, and so it limited what I did. But I bought a pretty expensive wireless camera that did 640 by 480 over wireless, full color,
really?
Pan tilt zoom. Yeah,
those can get pretty expensive, especially like the kind like that Jay was talking about, where they actually talk to a Wi-Fi access point or something like that. The cheaper ones are the ones that you actually have like a dongle or some kind of an antenna, and then they're proprietary and they just talk to each other. It doesn't have the full stack and all the hardware to go get on the web, and you have to actually plug it into a computer, and that's usually where you've got the video card and it goes in. But those, as far as being wireless, that's going to be your cheapest option.
Those the wired ones are way cheaper than the wireless, but you can get wireless sets that, are proprietary. They're not actually using regular,
They're not doing TCP/IP.
They don't pull an IP address, They're hard-coded to where you plug one thing into your computer, the other thing goes to the wireless camera, and those two things you can never break. They always can only talk to each other.
But does that kind of limit you on how many cameras you can have?
No, because some of the ones I'm looking at, each one it would only limit you to is how many channels that particular model of camera has.
And
so,
it's going to limit you to the distance that you can be
and the distance,
cameras.
Yeah. But if you've got a laptop inside on power, you say, hey, don't go into sleep mode. You leave it up and running. Mm-hmm. You'll be okay. Now, the issue is that you want to do it on a laptop. Most of the cards that I've seen are like PCI cards, or they're cards that go into desktop machines that can concatenate a lot of coax into a single thing. Mm-hmm. So you might want to get an external piece that does that, and I'm not super familiar with those, but most of the surveillance kits that I've seen, they all go into like some kind of a card that then plugs into a server, not so much a laptop.
Although nowadays it's possible that technology has gone to where there's PCI cards that go to wireless.
Ooh, yeah.
You mean PCMCIA?
Or they're just called PC
cards. USB, I meant USB.
USB. Yeah, USB. And I'm seeing one like that right now. Like, there's a little camera receiver. It's about 60, 70 bucks. And it does the same thing. You actually plug it into the computer over USB.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Maybe some USB dongles of some kind. Do you like a brand or just, kind of something you can tell me that gives me a suggestion of what to go look for?
I don't. Do you have anything flicked? He's looking something up. But do you have any brands?
And again, what kind of, like you said, 640 by 480, is that what I'm looking for as far as the
quality?
No, I've heard about lens size or something, like third of an inch or something. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, means. A lot of that, it depends. Mm. I mean, I wanted something that was decent quality, but that also consumes bandwidth and disk space.
The other thing you might want to do is make sure that whatever camera you get has like infrared LEDs around it to where you can do...
Night
stuff, because the chances are they're breaking it at night if it's,
Right. Yeah,
the thing is, once you get, like, really low-quality cameras, you're not going to be able to identify people, You're just going to get shapes.
Do this. Like, there are a couple, do you live inside town, kind of close to town?
Yeah.
Okay, like, Micro Center, I know, has, like, probably five or six different kits. I think, does Best Buy carry surveillance cameras? Do you guys know?
Fry's definitely does.
There are a lot of those. Micro Center definitely does. Go to those websites, see which ones they carry. go read up, go read some reviews, do stuff like that. And that way, if you wind up not picking the right package, you can actually return it. You know, without having to jump through all the hoops
and
on the
internet. Fry's advertises every Friday. Several of those are up here in the pages of their Chronicle ads.
So. Yeah, so you can probably, you know, get a tandem with a good price and then go read the review, something that'll work. And then at that point, you know, like, hey, is it USB? Do I need like a PC with a, you know, PCI card in it? You'll know what you need.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye.
Security cameras.
Sting operation.
All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right. Up next in the show, we're going to speak with George.
George, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Well, it seems like we already dwelled into the phone thing, so I'm going to continue it on. What I got is kind of one of those idiot questions. I have two phones. One dropped in the water Sunday. I got it in a bag of rice, I was told, and let it sit there a few days and see what happens. But anyway, I found my blueberry phone, BlackBerry phone, anyway. I wanted to find out, they're both the same type phone, Samsung, but what I wanted to find out, the other one, the BlackBerry does not have the type of SIM card that my other Samsung has. The other one is registered. This one isn't. They're both from Walmart, that Straight Talk type, Straight Talk phones. Would it be a real major way that I can go about two things, getting transferred over to the Samsung service or track phone service, same thing, away from Verizon? And number two, is it any way that I can access this other phone if it ever gets close enough to functioning to where at least maybe I can Bluetooth a lot of my information that's on the SIM card, because I can't think of no other way to get to
what the phone. What's the SIM card difference?
The one that's in my older phone, my slide phone, it's a little, I guess, 1 inch by a half inch little flat, you know, chip.
Plastic card with the gold contacts in the center.
Exactly, and the other one does not have one. If it does, it's not visible. I took the battery out.
It doesn't have one at all.
It doesn't have a SIM card at all, because some BlackBerries do not come with SIM cards if they're not enabled.
It depends on which carrier they ride on, right?
No, it doesn't. But not really. Because they're with Verizon, they carry both kinds of phones. They have SIM card phones and they have non-SIM card phones.
Okay, well, this is a non-SIM card phone. And that's what I was kind of wondering, because somebody told me, well, I should be able to, if I get the other phone, at least to respond to some of the button commands, I can hook up a USB. Hook the USB.
Well, yeah, you can take the phone that you dropped in the water. If it will power on and work, you can. It's a BlackBerry, right?
The other phone is, one is a BlackBerry, and the other one is not. It's just a regular slide.
The one that you're trying to recover data from. What is that?
That's that regular Samsung slide phone.
All right. I don't know about what they have for backup software. There's probably some desktop utility that you can use to connect to the phone that allow you to pull off your contacts and pull off your images. I don't know enough about the phone. None of it's going to matter if the phone doesn't turn on.
Right. Well, it does turn on, but what happens?
Well, none of it's going to matter if the phone doesn't turn on and you can't, like, connect it to a computer and read the data.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because that's what I was hoping, that port, you know, the port was dried out. Because, like I said, it did finally come on, and, I mean, I get a main screen and everything, but it's not responding to
Well, you might, if it's not responding to key presses, then that may be okay. If the phone comes on and it, you might try hooking it up with the USB cable if that's what it supports, and connect it to your
laptop.
But there may be some software that you need for that to be able to read the data off of it.
Okay, well,
you can easily Google search the brand of the phone, backup, and then with the word backup, and see if you can find out how to pull the data off of it. And I would imagine it's a matter of just connecting it to the computer. So once you get that on the computer, then it's going to be a question of whether or not that data can be transferred to the new phone using, like, the new phone's a BlackBerry. It's going to use BlackBerry Desktop Manager or something like that.
Right, right.
Is the software that phone uses. So whether it will import data from somewhere else or not. What all kind of data are we talking about?
Videos, photos. videos and my contacts.
Well, the videos and the photos might be as easy as plugging this thing into a USB to the computer and letting the computer see it, and then you might be able to double-click on the phone itself under my computer
right.
and see the folder structure.
Okay.
It's possible. I don't know. I know, like with my iPhone, for example, I plug it into my Windows computer. It shows up as an item under my computer. I can double-click on it. And I can drill down into the folders, and I can get all the images right there, and I can drag and drop them into a folder on my computer.
Okay, so basically, just kind of fool around with it and see what I can get it to respond to the commands from the computer.
Right.
Hopefully.
And now, if that doesn't work, there's also if it's just a standard phone SIM, you might be able to get a card reader and plug that into the card reader. And then plug the card reader in the computer and be able to.
That's what that guy called it. I couldn't remember. He said, I remember it was a device that he said I could take the SIM and slip it in, and it will actually read what's on the SIM card and put it.
As long as it's not in any proprietary data format, you should be able to copy it off. So, yeah, card reader.
Okay, yeah. Cause
take the SIM to Micro Center or someplace like that, Fry's, Micro Center, Best Buy. And just
Up here in Huntsville, so I'd have to travel towards Conroe to get to it.
Whatever you got is an option. Just make sure you get the right SIM, the right card reader that'll fit that card.
Sounds like a plan. Guys, again, y'all have saved the day.
Well, we'll see. Everybody, have a good day.
Hey, appreciate it. Y'all have a good night.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Bye.
All right, well, we got about 3 minutes before we're going to do the top of the station thing. 2 minutes, he says. Yeah, 2 minutes exactly. So it's not enough time to take a call. So we need a 2 minute anecdote. Hardy round of blank stares. Okay, Dwight, you want to tell us where we can go see your Prius?
Stopping at an intersection.
What's that?
In real time, Dwight could describe Prius at an intersection.
2 minutes from mid block to the stoplight. No, you wanted to say where you could go read this this article. If you just do a Google search for why do Prius owners drive like that, why do Prius drivers drive like that, you will find it. It's
a competition.
It is.
They're trying to get the best.
Well, I like what you said in the video. You said it's like a game.
They're trying to get the best gas mileage possible.
They're trying to level up.
It's the gamification of driving is what it is.
Is it distracting?
It is at first, and then you kind of get used to it. You kind of know what to do eventually, but it's fun driving. I call it driving to the data because you pay attention to kind of what the car is doing at any given moment, and you react accordingly.
All that needs to be on a heads-up display.
It is.
Is it on the windshield?
No, it's on the, but it's right below the windshield. It's nice.
Which makes it kind of easy to do for them.
Right. Oh. I don't ever feel like I'm not looking ahead of me.
I don't care if I'm doing 35 and a 65. I'm getting awesome MPGs.
Exactly.
And you're only going fast enough to not really hurt anybody.
That's right.
All right. So we got about 30 seconds. So we're going to...
30-second...
We're trying to do this whole, like, you know, do our outros properly and get out of here in time. All right. So we're going
to
let you know...
It takes us 11 seconds to do the outros.
Okay. Well, you're listening to... I've got 15 seconds. Okay. Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. He's Peter Hughes.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after this.
FreePress Houston and Begstar.net are happy to announce the FreePress Houston 10-year Celebranza on March 8th. After 10 years of publishing, FreePress Houston celebrates this milestone with a party to remember with musical acts STRFKR, otherwise known as Star Her, Super Mash Brothers, Devin the Dude featuring his live band, Dan Halen, Wild Moccasins, Sideshow Tramps, Venomous Maximus, Fistful of Soul, and The Hates. They're all playing, and it's going to be held at a warehouse at 2727 Canal behind the famed Original Ninfas. This party gets started at 5 p.m. and will go on strong until 2 a.m. This event will also feature a celebration of all things Houston with a 10-year retrospective of the arts and artists that have graced Free Press's pages. Cocktails are curated by Bobby Hagel and food is by Ninfas. But move quickly, my comrades, because this event will surely sell out. For more information, go to pegstar.net. KPFD Houston.
Want to help KPFT but can't make the drive out to the little house on Lovett Boulevard? A great way to aid KPFT is as simple as logging into Facebook and Twitter. Connect with KPFT via social media. It's simple. Just visit twitter.com/KPFT and facebook.com/KPFT Houston. Then share our links and donate form with your social circles on Twitter and Facebook. Chances are you know people who may not know KPFT, and you'll introduce them to the fantastic music, interviews, news, and more that you hear daily on this radio station. Remember, just visit twitter.com/KPFT or facebook.com/KPFT Houston to promote and support KPFT online. This is Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
And we're back. All right, so we had another hour of Technology Bites left sprawled out in front of us, ready to take and answer your computer questions. But
sorry, I was thinking something that was highly inappropriate and would have gotten people upset from New York.
Just like that.
Wow, just like that. All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. 713-526-KPFT. We hear just trying to make everything smooth and good and happy. Who's up on the smooth and good and happy Technology Bites?
All right. Then on the second half of the show, we're going to start it off with Dave.
Dave, you're
Dave
on the air.
This is the progressive hour, so be progressive.
You got me scared.
Good, because that's what progressive is supposed to do.
And we're showing no mercy tonight.
Well, no, he said that when you've got your stuff on the Internet, then somebody can easily take it. I'm also a photographer, Jay.
Yeah.
And on my site, I can right-click, but it doesn't give you the option to copy.
I don't care. I can still
think
get
that,
photos.
Yeah, do you think that protects you?
Well, that was my question, because a friend of mine, he said if it's on the Internet, I can get it.
From the casual person, it'll protect you, but even the casual person could low-tech it and take a screenshot of the screen and then save that. Anyone else, if they've got like a Firebug plugin or any kind of thing that shows them what the web elements are, the fact that they can view that picture means that they can get it. They can get it a number of different ways. It's just going to make it a little bit...
Downloaded, it's in the cache of the system that is looking at it.
Well, you know, you can look at the page source and you can get the image, direct link to the image. Definitely disabling right click is helpful, you know, but it's kind of like, you know, locking your door.
There also are some tricks to that where you can where on the server side, you can have it so that you can't pull an image directly. Like it has to be via referrer link.
Well, for example,
or you can cut it up into 100 pieces and then display them in a table. And that's the only way you can do it. If you're not ASIC compliant, you're not going to be able to see the
picture.
Well, I
know, for example, like Flickr has a means of delivering the content to where if you try to right click and download it, all you download is a blank file. So there are ways to protect it.
Let me get back to
this caller. Dave, definitely having the disable the right click is helpful. It's going to prevent the majority of those that are going to swing by and right click and save your image. But if somebody comes by, looks at one of your images and they want it, and they really want it, they can get it.
I know, because the guy emailed it to me. I told him, no, you...
He showed you, yeah.
And it was a nice-sized image.
Yeah. Well, here's some... I'm going to let Groovehouse chime in here, too, because he's also somebody who likes to put his content on the web, who's a photographer. Things that help mitigate... And I, for the longest time, I was anti-watermark, but now I'm just realizing that, you know, you just kind of have to suck it up and put a watermark on it.
I was just going to say watermark.
If you put a watermark on it, that's going to mitigate some. I mean, you will find people that steal your images with the watermark chopped out, or
they'll crop it.
They'll crop it, or they'll use the clone
smudge
tool
it
in Photoshop and get rid of it, or something.
Content aware, is that the one in Photoshop where it'll try to match the areas?
Yeah, So you watermarking. Embedding using I use Lightroom and I embed copyright data into the actual image file. That helps. I mean,
that
it doesn't
works on a JPEG, right?
Well, what else are you publishing?
A PNG.
I think it might work on a PNG
as
well.
You can put XIF data in a few different formats. Any of the newer formats, PNG will take it.
Yeah. So, but that only protects you down the road, because the person who steals it, they can still steal it and they can still display it, but you can
it's like
more
having
easily
a serial number on it.
Right.
But my question is, the company that sold me, you know, the website that I use, is that was one of their selling points, is that it would be safe. Now what do I go back and tell them?
Nothing's safe. That's what you tell them.
Well, I would be curious to know what their actual guarantee
make
was.
Make sure they didn't say that it was safer.
Yeah. Now, they may say that we are going to protect your images by disabling right-click. Well, they did. They protected your images from being right-clickable. But that doesn't mean that they protected your images from being taken. When your image, when I go to a website and I look at that image, for all intents and purposes, is on my computer. I downloaded it.
I mean, there are some tricks where you can use like Java or
Flash
or something like that. So it's the image isn't actually, you know, the image itself isn't actually loaded. It's actually displayed through an app.
Right.
Screenshot, though.
But then a screenshot you can't get around. Right. And then if you say, I'm going to do something with screenshot, then they just take their phone or a camera. And, I mean, at some point, if it's hitting their eyeballs, they can get a copy somehow.
There's no way to stop it.
Even if it's a low res, I upload it as a low res. It doesn't matter.
They can only download the low res. They can only download as high a resolution as you've put
out there. Yeah, if you make it 1 inch by 1 inch, then
now, wait a minute. Did this guy send you a higher res image than what you had published? Because this guy smoked, he might be blowing smoke.
Well, when he emailed it back to me, I put it in one of the programs that I use, and it had it as 3,300 times 2,600.
And you didn't upload it at that size?
Because when you the program automatically downsizes it.
Yeah, but it uploads. I don't know that what program.
I use PhotoBiz.
PhotoBiz, is that a photo app?
No, it's the company that serves.
Okay.
Can you get the full size pictures?
Pardon me?
Well, when you upload your image to PhotoBiz, is that who you're uploading it to?
Yes.
Are you uploading the high res to them and they're resizing it?
Most of them, no. A wedding night, I usually bring it down to about.
But to answer my question as asked, do you upload a high res image to them that they then downsize? Ever?
I have, yes.
Okay.
Typically, no.
Okay, but you have, and the guy that sent you your photo back, was that one that you uploaded at high res?
It might have, yeah, it might have.
All right. So my guess is that somewhere when you upload that image that they have the high-res version there. Because do you sell your photos through that site?
You can buy from there, but you have to pay me.
Right, I understand. But you're selling your photos through that site.
Yes.
So they have to have the high-res somewhere on their server to be able to sell you a print, you know, of a certain size, right?
Well, they just place the order. They're just looking at them, and then they call me and tell me what they want.
Oh, they don't actually – you're not dealing with one of those sites that actually provides prints if they buy them?
No. I don't want that.
All right.
But well, it's possible that that company doesn't actually alter whatever you upload. They just resize it in the browser to fit the space. So it could be a really big, high-res, great-quality image, but then their software says – because you can do this in the browser.
You can do it in HTML.
You can have a huge image that is 4 feet by 5 feet if you printed it out. But in the browser, you can tell it, I want to display this image as 1 inch by 2 inches, and it'll do it.
So my point is that either the guy has access to your actual files on your computer, or that website has the full high-res version on there.
I guess I better call them and I guess find more information about it.
But getting back to the basic point is that if you want to display your images on the internet, there is nothing you can do to prevent someone from taking that image. You can make it harder for them to do it, but you cannot stop them from doing it. Period.
The only way you can do something is to manipulate your photo in a way that can't be undone by them very easily.
Well, that's what we talk about, watermarks.
Like doing a watermark.
You know, if you do
or making it so low res that I mean, they can't create the data from what's available to them.
Right, so first thing you would consider is not uploading any high-res versions.
Okay, yeah, and I can control that.
But you know what? Even low-res versions of images, if they're...
Some people are happy enough.
Some people are happy enough to use them because they're only delivering it via the web, where 72 DPI is king. So you could upload a low-res image and it could still get stolen. But you're going to make your images a lot less interesting to thieves if you
or somebody
keep
wants
the res
to print it out. Like,
right. But
although some people don't care about that.
They don't
either.
Care about that either. So watermark, you know, sometimes just putting a semi-transparent watermark right across the middle of the image, it's going to make it less desirable to steal. It's going to make it less interesting to look at on the web, but it's going to make it less interesting to steal.
If you just put, like, monkey Jesus face on everybody.
No, you don't want to show low quality that when they look at them, they say, God, this stuff looks bad.
Well, you know, having done this for a while, it's a trade-off.
Yeah.
You have to realize that, you know, there are going to be crazy, very hard to deal with people that are going to steal your photos, not talking about anything that just happened last year to me. But, you know, there are going to be people that are going to take your stuff. And to me, it's part of the price you pay to have this really magnificent distribution system. I mean, if my images are on my computer, on my hard drive, they're safe. Nobody's taking those unless they come into my house and steal my computer. On the other hand, they're not getting out in front of potentially millions of eyes that say, hey, that's a great image and I would like to buy that. And I've had numerous images stolen. I mean, I could sit down and show you all these sites that are using my images. They're overseas. I can't touch them. There's nothing I can do. My photos are being used to promote Houston on several New Zealand travel sites. They're out there. But also, I've sold more of my photos because they're out there. So it's kind of like a grocery store or a department store. They have what they call shrink.
Shrinkage.
I don't like using shrinkage because that reminds me of Costanza.
It's cold in here.
It's cold. But it's also known as shrink. We called it shrink when I worked at Best Buy. And they expect that a certain amount of their inventory is going to be shoplifted or broken. That's built into the cost of doing business. And I think, unfortunately, that's kind of the way it is on the internet, too. There's just going to be a certain amount of your stuff getting misappropriated and used in ways that you don't want it to be. You do have legal recourse, if you find it, to go after them, and I've done that as well.
I've never found it, but I know it's being done because it's out there.
Well, I mean, hopefully that's not too much hubris on your part. I mean, at first I was kind of flattered to realize that some of my photos were worthy of stealing. But I've had other people that are photographers that, you know, we've looked and their stuff's not being stolen.
Well, you use Google Image Search.
It's just not. Huh?
You use Google Image Search.
I
to
use
actually
Google
track
Image
down
Search.
Your stuff,
you know, yeah, if you want to, there's a plugin for, well, actually, if you go to google.com and you click on images on Google, you can upload an image. You click on the little camera button inside the search bar and you can upload an image to Google. And it will search the internet for any image that looks like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I find mine.
A lot of fun.
That's how I find mine. And I've gone so far as I use a plugin for Google Chrome that basically automates that. I can right click. I go to my website. I right click on one of my images and I say search Google and it'll search. It'll give me a whole page, you know, page after page. If it's a popular one of my images that have been stolen.
It's also pretty entertaining because it will show you things that kind of look like it that are often.
They're sometimes completely different.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it'll show you. It also does, like, if you're building a website, it's kind of cool because you say, I want stuff that's in the color scheme. That's going to be accentuate the colors in this picture. It'll show you other pictures that are in that color range.
Well, like if you upload a picture of a white cat sitting somewhere, it will show you some pictures of white cats, but it almost also might include like some pictures of like people dressed as ghosts for Halloween or like a close up of a mop head.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
the first thing that Google image search will do is show you a bunch of images that are similar, but then it will show you a list of images that are exactly the same. If it's a photo you've taken of the, like, say if you take a picture, I did this, I have a picture of the front of the Alamo. Well, so do about a billion other photographers. So if I search for that image, I find everybody else's picture of the front of the Alamo. But I've got this great picture of downtown that I took, and it's very unique. And I must say, an awesome photo of downtown Houston. It has been stolen, and I can show it to you. It's been stolen and stolen and stolen and stolen. And in the process of chasing these people down, I've had some pretty horrible experiences. I've had some pretty pleasant experiences, and I've had some remarkable experiences where I've actually sold the photo. And I've contacted the people that are using it. I say, look, you know, hello, I'm Jay. I see you're using my photo. Here's my photo that I published in 2008. You can look at it here. You're not licensed to use it, and then let's have a conversation. I never go in saying I want money, because my goal is to have them take it down. Say, look, you're not licensed to use it. Take it down. And then if they come back and say, well, how much would it cost to license this photo? And I say, well, this is my licensing fee. And they'll either say yay or nay. And I've sold that photo a couple of dozen times just doing that. Made more money than I would ever make off that photo otherwise.
Oh, how about that? I will do some searches on some of my more popular ones.
Yeah, no, what I'd like to do is I can look at the log files of my web server, and I can see which images are getting the most traffic, people are using, you know, that they're looking for, and it's turning up in certain search results, and then those are the images I go look for to see if anybody liked it enough to steal it.
And it would show up in Facebook, I trust?
Facebook? Yeah. Actually, because my photo of Houston a lot of people in Houston using Facebook like to use it as their banner, the top banner of their Facebook page. I found it a couple of dozen times by Facebook. Facebook's got a great takedown page. You go, you fill out the information, submit it. Day later, they come back and say, we've got rid of it for you.
Wow. Oh, very good. That's I had no idea that was available.
Yep, subject near and dear to my heart.
Jay, have you...
Google search J. Lee Petapixel.
Petapixel?
Yeah, Petapixel.
P-E-D?
P-E-T-A, like PETA, like People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. PETA. Pixel. P-I-X-E-L. Google search J. Lee Petapixel, and you'll read my story of woe with internet copyright infringement.
You know what you ought to do, Jay, is... And you may have done this, but you ought to write something that talks about how to find these things, how to track it down, kind of go through the various steps that you do.
I need to write it down. I need to write it down. Yeah, I've gotten really good at it.
In fact, if you want to do it as a tech blog guest post, I'd love to have it.
All right. We'll talk when I get back. All right. Well, so good luck, sir.
I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck. Thanks. Bye. Yeah. So internet copyright infringement is alive and well on the internet.
I like finding my images that have the color scheme. That's really fun.
Yeah, I like that too.
That's kind of fun.
Well, if you go to baldheretic.com, if you're still listening or anybody else is listening, go to baldheretic.com. You'll see the latest find that I found, the latest image infringement that I found, where somebody took a picture that I had uploaded of myself.
Oh, right.
And turned it into, well, I think one of the most spectacular troll, ogre, whatever things you can imagine. It's awesome and scary.
But don't look at it before bedtime.
Whatever you do, don't feed it. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, how are y'all doing tonight?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Hey, listen, I have a question about a Galaxy S3 with a broken LCD. The outside of the screen is fine. It's not cracked at all, but the inside, it doesn't come on anymore. There's no screen as far as, like, just a black screen. I priced it getting fixed, and it's, like, ridiculous. It's crazy. $300 to get it fixed. Galaxy S3, Samsung. Do you think it'd be better to wait until the 4 comes out before I get it fixed? Do you think the price will go down on repair, or do you think maybe it'll go up?
The repair
price won't go down, but buying a secondhand S3 will get cheaper as time goes by.
The S4 is supposed to be announced on March 14th, but you know, you don't know how long it'll be between the announcement and when they actually start selling it. There's usually a delay, but at some point, the price on a used one will go down, and you may be able to buy it for cheaper than you can get it fixed. However, there are several places that advertise fixing screens for a lot less than $300. Where did you find that price?
Well, there's just about everywhere. From what I found out, I think the screen is attached to the motherboard. The LCD is attached to the motherboard.
That's very
it's all
possible.
One piece.
That's very possible.
And it's very expensive, I guess. So, I mean, that's the one with the quad core.
I would imagine that a smartphone is like a laptop in that the screen is half the value of the device.
At least. I can get my MyTouch 4G fixed for $89 if I break the screen on it. I've had that done.
But it's a much smaller screen.
Yeah, but it's not that much smaller.
It's also not $200
and $200 and some odd smaller.
It's the type of screen, and it's the design.
Right, right. So, do you think the S4 is going to be break-proof? I hope it's break-proof.
Nothing is break-proof. Nothing is break-proof. If you are prone to breaking phones, then you should probably pick up the insurance policy that your provider offers with the phone.
Well, I mean, think the insurance policies only go for two breaks or whatever, and that's it. And
if you're breaking a phone more than twice in its lifetime, you got other issues.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're messing with glass phones, I mean, like the iPhone S4.
What about a protective case?
Yeah, those are nice until you take it out to do something with it. You know,
whatever. You got to just keep excusing your bad behavior. You're like Barrett.
I was going to say, what do you mean two breakages in the lifetime of a phone? That's normal.
No phone is safe.
That's right. I'm pretty good with phones, but I'll tell you what, I've broken my MyTouch 4G. That one's broken twice now.
I would say maybe buy phones that are a couple of generations out of date. That way you can keep replacing. I mean, rather than have the phone fixed, you could probably find a complete 4G. One of those other phones.
Hey, maybe I could trade that one in on a different model, huh?
Broken or unbroken?
It's got to be worth something, broken, huh?
Might be. It might be. I mean, I've sold a broken camera lens on eBay for one third of the value. I mean, it's pretty significant. Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, gee, I wish I were more help.
I wish you were less destructive.
I hear you. I do too. Yeah, my phone does too.
Good luck, sir. Thanks
for calling.
Thank
you very much.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
All right. 713-526-5738. I see somebody has a comment. Do we want to go to that first?
If you'd like to.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Tom.
Tom, you wanted to talk about stealing images.
Yeah, Jay, this is Tom, a friend of yours. And I kind of like think about this as the way I know musicians, and they get all upset when people steal an image or a recorded CD of their music or whatever. But yet, you know, when somebody likes the music, I'm speaking for myself, I'll buy everything they have recorded, everything I can find that's bootleg, and your images, to me, would be the same way, where if you're doing good work and I find you via a boot, you know, a copy or a ripoff, I'm going to search you out, and I'm going to say, that artist is really good, that photographer is very good, and I want more of his work, and I'm going to be willing to pay for it. I don't know if that's a good analogy or not.
No, I think that's a fair analogy. I think that, yes, if you put content out there, somebody might go and find it, stumbling across it, and they'll grab it for free, and they'll check it out, and they'll say, well, I really like that. I want to find out who created this, and I want to patronize him.
Right,
But that's not the normal. That's not everybody. There are people that look to the internet for music and other content such as photos or videos, or there are people that look to the internet like it's some kind of feeding trough that they can just belly up to and stick their muzzle in there and slurp it all up with no repercussions and not be beholden to anybody. Bands get their music stolen and will never see a penny from, I would say probably if somebody's out there downloading the stuff for free, I would say easily 90% of the people downloading stuff and grabbing it for free have no intent at any time whatsoever of paying the artist at all. Period. But they think it's an entitlement.
But I also think that perspective artificially inflates what bands think they're losing. Like bands say, man, 99 people downloaded this album free and one person paid. We got $10 for this, and if everybody would have paid, we would have got $1,000.
That's a Metallica argument.
I agree with you. I would say that
7 of them would have bought it.
I would say that the majority of the people who are downloading stuff for free, if they had to pay for it, would go and find something else. They wouldn't care. They wouldn't be like, oh man, I gotta pay for it.
I don't agree with that at all. I really don't. I mean, when people like stuff, they're willing to do it. You know, they're willing to plunk some something down for it. And I think that's been experimented on a little bit with quite a few bands where they put their stuff up for, you know, pay me whatever.
Yeah, and some bands were happy with that, and some bands felt like they got totally ripped off and got jaded by trying that.
Yeah, well, maybe they weren't that good, you know.
These are big names. Now you can say the big names aren't good, but I mean they're like really, really popular bands.
I think that there are. I've dealt being a computer guy and working with large user bases of computer users, and
you mean a large number or large.
Large number, many. And scanning the contents of their hard drive and finding their pirated music libraries, I would say that...
How do you know it's pirated?
They told me.
Okay.
I found it right next to the BitTorrent client, okay? I mean, or whatever.
A lot of people that have 2 terabytes of
I know
music
they're, no, no. You
didn't,
could,
didn't buy
you
it
could,
all.
You could tell, yeah, I mean, somebody who's got a hard drive filled up with the most eclectic music collection you've ever seen in your life, upwards of a terabyte in size, probably not acquired legitimately. I see that all the time. I would say that the people who are... that are true music lovers who understand that there's cost and effort to produce music, that percentage of people is dwindling with the, you know, the onslaught of content being available on the internet. I think a lot of people expect it to be free and want it to be free. And even people that realize that it's illegal to download it for free still do it anyway.
What about like cassette copies?
I don't care about that.
But, I mean, that's what people did for a long time when cassettes were sold.
Well, you know, fine.
That degrades naturally over time. The cassettes would eventually break.
The amount of effort it would take to buy an album, stick it on a turntable, and record it onto cassette times however many times you want to duplicate it. It takes time, and it's just not going to be that much of damage. But if I could go, you know, if 1,000 people could go download a song...
Or you can make 1,000 copies
in nothing flat.
1 minute.
And then, of course, people argue that says, well, it didn't cost you anything to produce 1,000 copies, so how are you losing money?
But wait. You know, when all the people who hear that song, when the band comes to town and they buy a ticket to go see them, aren't they getting a return?
That is one of the arguments for that.
Now switching hats from online photographer to online musician.
Okay.
All right, I play in a band. I do not have a record label behind me promoting me and all this stuff. I'm happy for my music to get downloaded and taken by anybody who wants it, with the idea that that's my price. That's the price I pay for the promotion and the accessibility. I'm happy for it. I think that that model works very well. As a musician of the low caliber, low exposure that I am, that is a tool I can leverage to sell more CDs than I would have otherwise. I think where this is broken, where it's broken is that you have these large music companies that own the rights to these songs that I think legitimately they do spend their money to promote the artist to get all the marketing collateral out there, and they spend money to get that artist up, you know, into the public eye and sell their product.
It's like pre-fame Bieber versus post-fame Bieber,
right?
Because, I mean, he like hawked his stuff all over the place all the time. I think it came from YouTube or something. I don't remember what. I don't know for sure, actually, because I don't really pay attention. But I mean, the thing is, at some point, that stuff being able to be massively copied and sent to hundreds of thousands of people in the blink of an eye provided a lot of exposure for him. But then at some point, that same system, once he gets to a certain level, starts to diminish the returns that he could possibly get.
Right.
So at a low artist level, especially like a local artist, it can give you a lot of reach that there's no way you would ever have in the past.
Right. And I think as musicians become more savvy with the technology and the ability to market themselves, they can eliminate that middleman. And so if I sell a song at for $1 as opposed to selling an entire CD for $20, then I could see a large return, you know, on my investment.
The music industry, to me, the music industry has pretty much always been broken. I mean, even its very inception, it was a broken system, like relying on broken things to take advantage of things. So some people got money and other people didn't. And usually it wasn't the people that actually made the music. Now, those people weren't the ones taking the financial risk, right? It was people that had money that would invest to pay for the recording studio and the recording equipment and the recording time, and then would pay for all the pressings and then would pay for all the promotion. And they spent a lot of money, so they want to recoup that. But usually they ended up recouping it, the investment, and recouping and getting most of the profit, you know. And it was only like huge sellers where the artist actually like got a whole lot of money from it. And then
when the artist achieved power.
And then that's when royalties, like artists maintaining their royalties, became an issue, because originally they usually didn't. Like there were houses that, you know, like usually the label actually was a house that controlled the rights to the song, the lyrics, the music. It wasn't actually the artist that even owned that stuff. So it's a messed up system.
Hey, you know, my original comment, thought, question, I guess you guys proved me wrong, is that the photography thing doesn't fit analogy of the music industry, because, you know, they're not compatible.
Well, I mean, content being taken without licensing or payment for the content affects all content providers, whether photographers or musicians or videographers. Yeah. Certainly there's an element with music where you have independent versus, large clearinghouses that produce, you know, your Capitol Records and all Universal and all of those people, RCA.
Artists are more like musicians are more likely to have followers than photographers in general. I'm not saying that, like,
no,
there
agree.
Aren't
That's...
people who follow photographers,
yeah.
but usually it's
yeah.
other photographers that are into following certain photographers, right? Whereas musicians, it's the whole world. Like, anybody in the whole world will be like, I love that band. But a lot of people don't go, you know, I love that photographer, and I'm going to buy prints of all their stuff to put on my wall.
Right. And I'm going to go see every photo show. He's going to come to town and put up a photo show, and I'm going to it. Right. I'll pay scalper prices to see Jay Lee.
And I'm getting the T-shirt.
Front row seats.
I mean, I owe Jay a couple of beers for a great image, so I'm going to hang up on that note. You know?
Well, you know, for me, and I'm not a good case study either, because I photograph out of just the sheer love of doing it. Did he hang up? He did hang up. Yeah, he did. You there? No, he's
not anymore.
Yeah, I think
anyway,
he's
so I photograph for the sheer love of it. I shove a lot of content onto the web. Many times I'm happy if I've taken a photo of a band for the band to use it, or if I've taken a photo of a venue, I'm happy for the venue to have it and use it. I put it out there, and I hopefully I'm building a good reputation with what I'm doing, but I get my nose bent out of shape if somebody takes my content and uses it to make money. Not so much that they're taking the image and trying to sell the image. They're taking the image and using it to promote their business. You know, so if you've got a real estate agency out there and you're selling houses in Houston, and you go to your website and there's my picture that I took of downtown Houston sitting on top of your page, making it look beautiful and making people want to use your service and get you a lot of money, and you've just said, you know what, I don't even know who Jay Lee is. I found that photo on the internet, don't even get me started about real estate agents anyway, but that to me is not fair. You know, for people to just look at the internet like it's some kind of food trough, they can just slurp up whatever they want and go and make money with it. I think that's unfair. There are people that are generating this content. They deserve to be compensated for their work if you're using it for commercial purposes. If you're using it for, if you download my image and you set it as the wallpaper on your laptop, I don't care. Please, that's cool. If the thought of you turning on your laptop, looking at your desktop, seeing my photo as your background,
unfortunately,
that makes me happy.
That analogy breaks down for musicians generally.
True.
If you're keeping that music for yourself and you're just listening to it in the privacy of your own home, because you know, public.
Like I said, I'm not a good case study for it either, because I'm kind of the same way with my music. If the thought of somebody listening to one of our CDs and enjoying it, whether they
I think you have to get to a certain size where you feel like you're really losing from from everybody doing that instead of gaining, you know, notoriety or
recognition. I think it also has to do with, you know, like if you really people who do like the artist and people that do show the artist respect by saying, you know, I stumbled on your music, because the way we used to do it is we used to hear the song on the radio. That's where it was free. You know, you had the commercials, whatever, but you heard it on the radio. You said, well, I like to hear that song more often, like all the time. So I'll go to the record store and I'll buy that record. Of course, one of the arguments that
you also got really big art pieces on it with a lot of stuff.
Right,
on
but the complaint, one of the common complaints was, why do I have to buy
ten other songs
to get the one song I like? I'm completely fascinated by the idea that you can go buy a song that I wrote that I have available on the internet for $1. You go get it from iTunes. You can download just the song you want. If you want to hear me sing Poke You in the Eye, it's $1. And I get whatever, 20 cents on the sale or whatever, right? I don't even know what I get. Probably not even 20 cents.
If you get 20 cents, that's pretty good.
How about right now? Does he even have $1?
I buy that for $1.
But it's, you know, but if you want to go out and build your own music collection one song at a time instead of buying the album, that's kind of cool. You can do it now, and you can do it for a reasonable price. If you like
I know a lot of people are like that. I actually don't like that. Like, I like the fact that if you want to buy this, you have to buy like a complete thing by an artist that's like a bunch of songs where you hear stuff that you wouldn't normally listen to, and you get their perspective on more than this one thing. I agree
with you, but that's partially because of the way I was raised too, but because I come from that era, where you bought, you know, you didn't get the milk for free.
A lot of times I listen to whole albums from beginning to end.
Well, that was that.
Well, they were packaged, but like that too, though. A lot of groups.
No, but I mean, I don't even, not thematic albums. Just I listen to entire albums beginning to end. Well, like,
what? Just pointing at something.
It's a monitor.
Two people.
We're having a very large conversation.
I know, but they might have also a great conversation if we.
Now Dwight's running the show. It's not me anymore. It's Dwight.
Don't get mad at me, Jay.
Pushy
saying,
Prius owners. I don't like that.
I'm thinking of our callers.
I'm sorry, we are in this hour.
Yeah, shouldn't you be asleep?
All right,
sorry.
Prius, let's pick up the pace.
We're coasting down a hill right now. We're lightly applying the brakes so that we're getting some of that regenerative feedback.
This conversation's coming to an end from coasting. Anyway, I agree with Flick that the album experience is, you know, the idea is that you hear the one song on the radio, do you like it? You go buy the album, you get exposed to all the other songs, and then you realize that the radio's got no taste at all. They should have been playing this song all the while. They never did.
Because sometimes you find amazing songs that you would have never heard, you know. But on the other hand, sometimes they had one good song.
On the other hand.
Wait, and you had that $20 risk to find out if they had one good song.
People EMF listen to the radio?
EMF had one good song.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Whether it's internet radio or broadcast radio or XM radio, yes, they still listen.
That's unbelievable.
what are you doing listening to us anyway?
Well, so, you know, that's what Shuffle's all about, too. So, all right. That horse has been beaten
to a bloody pulp.
Yeah. Let's go on, move on to a call then.
Let's find another horse.
713-526-5738. Steal my music, steal my images.
Don't steal my horse.
Don't steal my horse.
Whatever. You can't get shot for that. They need, like, you know, Lost, where if you steal an MP3, artists can come and shoot you down.
Chop off
That's
your
Texas,
mouse.
Yeah. Texas thing.
They chop off your mouse finger. All right.
No double click for you.
Double click. All right, Groovehouse, who do we have up next?
All right, up next, by Length of Hold, we are going to speak with George.
George, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey there, thank you for taking my call. I had a Windows XP computer. I went to Windows 7. I never had this problem before, and this keeps happening. It's bugging the heck out of me. Sometimes I get Windows updates, but instead of it telling me to download these updates and giving me a choice when I want to install them, it installs them and it restarts my computer automatically, and this is causing a problem because sometimes I'm recording like a radio show or something overnight, and when I come back, the thing is stopped and the computer has been restarted by itself. Is there a way of stopping that?
You can turn off automatic updates. You could, there are several settings if you go into Windows Update. Okay. Where you can configure it to either install it automatically without asking you or ask you, or either there are a number of different settings. So just Google search, configure Windows Update, or just look at your Windows Update settings and you can adjust that no problem. All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. We've got about 20 minutes left in the show. We've got open lines galore. One call in the queue. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Steve.
Steve, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, how you guys doing? By the way, your last caller is my old longtime friend George, who referred me to your show.
All right.
I have a strange situation here with a TV set. It's my sister's TV set, and it's a new set. I don't have the manual for it right now, but it inadvertently picks up caller ID that comes into the home. Now, I don't have caller ID hooked. It's on DirecTV. I don't have caller ID hooked up through DirecTV. And the only test I've done so far is one night a couple weeks ago, the caller ID was showing up on the TV screen. So I unplugged the wireless router, and I noticed that it stopped. But when I plugged it back in, it still took about 3 or 4 hours before it started to show up again.
How do you?
Is that strange?
How do you get your phone service? Who provides your phone service?
Yeah, it's CenturyLink.
CenturyLink? Is it voice over IP?
Yeah.
Well, is it? Is,
oh, no, CenturyLink's what used to be Quest.
So is it copper pair? Is it just like a regular phone line?
Yeah, it's a regular phone line. I do have caller ID service on it.
And do you? And your TV, is it connected to your internet?
No.
No.
There's no connection. The only thing it's connected to is DirecTV. And there's no...
Their DirecTV box isn't one of those old ones that has a phone line hooked into it to, like, call to validate, like, pay-per-view movies or something?
No, there's no telephone lines, and I have two DirecTV boxes, and the jacks are empty. We don't have any telephone mounting cords going into any of the boxes, either of the boxes here. So this must be strictly Wi-Fi somehow, and I'm really curious. I'm very curious why it's intermittent, too. Why is it certain days it's not there, certain days it is there?
Have you asked DirecTV?
Yes.
What do they say?
They said there's no way it could be through them unless I have
the TV really
a hardwire connection into the box, jack on the box.
Is the television really new?
Yeah.
Is it internet connected?
It's not connected to the internet.
Does it have Wi-Fi capability?
That's what I'm suspecting.
Because some televisions now do.
Why do you say that you don't have voice over IP through CenturyLink? Do you think you've got the plain old telephone service for sure? You know that beyond
a
shadow
of a doubt?
Yeah,
I don't think it's VoIP.
The connections are usually too good. Does any of your telephone equipment connect to the router?
You know, I'm not sure because I'm not really a computer person.
Yeah, but this is your house equipment. You would know whether or not your phone equipment connected to your internet or not.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
CenturyLink is voice.
Yeah. I
was going to say, you can't tell by quality because voice over P nowadays is pretty decent. And a lot of times they have quality of service controls.
I think
it sounds good.
Yeah, I think what's going on with CenturyLink is even though you might have like a pair of, you know, a twisted pair of copper coming into the house, they're doing data over that. So whatever devices you're talking to, I think it goes to the data. And I know that if they're using traditional voice over IP, like the kind of packets that they use, SIP packets, you can actually strip off some of that information and get information about the calls that are going on. So this smart TV may be smart enough to where it says, hey, I see voice over IP traffic, and here's what's tagged as a caller, and it displays that. And sometimes it picks it up, and sometimes it doesn't.
Could be. It's better, you know, best explanation, you know, I've heard.
Well, let me ask you one other question, too, is do you have wireless internet at your house? Just simple yes or no answers right now. You do have wireless internet. Do you have it secured?
Yes.
Okay, so it requires that you use a passphrase to connect to it?
Yep.
Okay, so unless he configured that on the TV.
Have you not put that into the TV?
No, it was never set on the TV.
So it's probably not joining the Wi-Fi, even if it has Wi-Fi enabled. So, and now it gets its connection from DirecTV. So it's connected up to DirecTV. Is that satellite, right?
Yeah.
All right. So it's connected to your DirecTV. And is the caller ID that you're seeing a call that is actually coming in on your phone system?
Yes.
Okay, so somebody actually calls you, and the caller ID for that shows up on the TV.
Yep.
Now, there may be an option. I don't know where it's coming from. I cannot answer that question. But there's probably an option on the TV to turn that off.
Yeah, I wonder. Well, I'll have to look through the manual
Look through the setups. But I know Suddenlink offers this as a feature. But I would say, what model TV is it?
Oh, what is that? Is it a Samsung? That
I don't
TV
know.
Is?
You bought it.
It's not mine.
Oh, it's not yours?
No, it's my sister's TV set.
Oh.
What brand TV is that?
You're going to have to look it up then. I was hoping that you could give me a model number real quick, and I'd look forward to see if it had a caller ID feature, but...
Don't worry
about it. We don't have time for that. But
you know, the Pope may have some free time here pretty shortly, and you could get him to come by.
Yeah, and another day.
But
what is it? It's a Sanyo TV, by the way. If that helps, I don't know.
No, it doesn't really. But Google search Sanyo, get the model number, and turn off caller ID, and see if you can find instructions on how to do it. It could probably at least disable it.
Yeah,
it's receiving the signal from, but. DirecTV is not providing your phone service.
I don't see how the connection is in there. Like, I'm baffled by how something that is not internet aware, that's not on his Wi-Fi, knows about these phone calls that's coming in through another way when he's never paired on
Bluetooth.
Unless the phone service is HDLNA enabled. Because my TV is aware of HD. I mean, if I go into my inputs, but that's because
it'd have to be on the network. That's what I'm saying.
It'd have to be on the network.
It's got to be on the networks.
Yeah.
And then I wonder if he's got a guest account. Like, what brand of? No.
It doesn't sound right because even the guest accounts, you have to have a passphrase to get on.
Could it use Bluetooth, IR, anything like that?
I haven't seen any Bluetooth TVs lately. I don't think so. It's all Wi-Fi, and it does a lot of like automatic stuff.
It's got to be coming from the CenturyLink.
It's coming from within the house.
It's got to be coming. It's got to be coming from DirecTV. DirecTV is somehow communicating to the phone system. So far, Dave has not been able to give us a completely clear picture on the technology setup he has at his house. So we're all just stumbling.
You know, you mentioned that you've talked to DirecTV. Is the television set relatively new?
Yes.
Call Sanyo.
Mm-hmm.
And see what they say.
Yeah.
They may know something. Because actually the display could be coming from the television as opposed to DirecTV.
That's what I'm thinking. But, okay.
Good luck, Dave. Thanks for a challenging one.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's also possible that either someone in the house or the DirecTV installer may have turned it on for him and he didn't know it. That's possible. It may be connected. If he doesn't understand, you know, what wire goes into what, he may not know what he's looking at.
That's just strange. I'm trying to find any... I have seen references
remember,
it's to...
funny,
call-
I remember that technology like 25 years ago or something. I remember my grandfather bought a Zenith, set TV, like wooden box with the speakers built on the sides
console.
With the like fabric,
right.
you know,
console
fabric
TV.
Covering. And you plugged the phone line into it. And when somebody called you, the caller ID would pop up on his TV and he could mute it and take the call over the TV.
Really?
Yeah.
About 25 years ago?
I think so.
Wow. In the 80s, yeah. When caller ID first came out, there was some...
Whoa, the 80s was 25 years ago.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Caller ID for Fios TV lets you see details of outgoing, incoming, and missed phone calls on your TV.
That's if he's got fiber, though. I don't think we've got Fios in Houston.
Well, I'm just saying is that, I mean, I'm trying to understand the technology. Yeah,
he didn't say who his internet provider was, did he?
Yeah, DirecTV.
The internet provider.
Oh, who is getting
it? He didn't.
No, he did not actually.
Because what if it's...
what if it's DirecTV?
Could it be? Or what if it's DSL? No, DirecTV is satellite.
Yeah, it's two different things. Like, if he had UVerse, I could see everything working together. Right. There, you know, maybe he's just missing a piece. He's leaving out the piece, the connecting piece.
He is missing a piece.
DirecTV does do a bundled phone service.
And it'll do caller ID, but you have to have phone service through them and not through who he thought he had phone service through, which was CenturyLink. He also thought he had a POTS connection, so who knows?
Yeah. 713-526-5738. I got about 11 minutes left in the show, less a outro, so about 8 minutes left in the show. We probably take another call or so. Groovehouse is now screening calls. I'm trying to... I want to know the answer to that, what was going on. Unfortunately, I mean, call Sanyo. They should be able to tell him. You know, hopefully I'll get some support on that. That would be really distressing to have that pop up on my screen, like right during the critical scene. Let's see, TV shows, caller ID, CenturyLink. What do we got, Groovehouse? Oh, wow. No sale. What was that, just to tell us they didn't want to talk to us?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We're taking your calls. We've got
6 minutes.
Minutes that we got to kill. All right. So I see a call coming in, so that's good. We'll see if we can get another call on the air and wrap this show up tonight. Don't forget,
I'm seeing some ads for DirecTV service through CenturyLink. CenturyLink could rebundle DirecTV, and if it's all aware of the same thing, that's how he could be getting them down. He'd probably left. That's the part he was leaving out. So, yeah, he could just have a TV that was aware of the DirecTV stuff. It comes down through there. So he should have said, hey, I'm buying internet service and, you know, TV through the same company. That's what it looks like. I didn't know they were partnered, but it looks like they are.
Okay. So it's probably...
Yep. CenturyLink and DirecTV bring you my CenturyLink on DirecTV. These features include TV caller ID, TV voicemail. That's it. That's what's going on.
That's what's going on. It is linked and he just doesn't know it.
Yeah, he doesn't know it. Because there's no other way. I mean, it's a poltergeist situation that your TV is talking to you if there isn't a link somehow to the phone. So,
mystery solved. Or was it? If he's still listening, that's probably where it's coming from. But I think there's a setting on the TV, too, that tells you, I don't want this to be displayed on my screen. Turn that off.
Are we still talking about this?
It was a bloody internet hook.
We got a call.
We were, occupying time and space while you screened this call.
Oh, gotcha.
So go ahead.
Okay.
Take it away, Groovehouse.
Well, next up and possibly last on the show, we're going to speak with Michael.
Michael, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, hey, I have an HP Windows 7 PC laptop. I have an HMI problem. It worked flawlessly the first time, plugged and unplugged multiple times, still worked. A month later, the TV will not recognize the output. I would like to figure out how to fix that.
HDMI from your laptop?
Cable? Right.
Like Groovehouse said, have you tried a different cable?
I have not, but because it's plugging, actually my girlfriend's computer.
Yeah, plugging and unplugging can, I ruined an HDMI
HDMI cables are crappy design. They have about, 16 or 18 cables inside them, some wrapped, intertwined, some not. Because of that, they're very small, thin cables to keep the total cable size down. So it's not necessarily all that difficult if you bend it or crimp it to break stuff inside of it.
Okay.
I'd try a new cable.
Sure.
Also on so what kind of laptop is it?
It's an HP.
An HP?
Yeah.
Have you tried that thing where you toggle sending the display somewhere else?
I will write that down.
There's an option, when you connect a laptop to an external monitor, usually through through the VGA, there's a function F8 toggle where it's sitting the display to.
Yeah, I tried that.
You did try that. Okay.
Are you Windows 7?
Uh-huh.
Isn't Windows 7 aware of multiple displays, too?
Yes.
Can you go in there and send it, say, hey, I'd like to send my display to the HDMI?
Right.
Yeah. Check your display settings. They might be able to turn it on. Particularly
if you have software installed to work with your graphics card.
Okay.
It might be in there as opposed to the standard.
Do you think updating the drivers would help?
Updating, they might, but I would first look at settings.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. All right. That didn't do it.
We did have a caller call in and also say, wow, it's been over 20 years since that TV caller ID thing. I was like, yeah. He was just as surprised as Barrett was.
Did we anyway call and say that we were choppy?
You know, children born in the 90s are now, you know, legally able to drink.
Barrett's shaking his head.
Wow. I'm going to be drinking at the Geek Gathering.
I heard
What's
that.
What's that movie that
That's
you...
right. That's right. My Coming daughter is old enough to drink now. She was born in the early
90s. Yeah. Chug it, chug it, chug it.
We have a Geek Gathering this weekend?
We have a Geek Gathering.
This Geek Gathering.
This Friday? Well, that's
okay. The movie that we were talking about that you liked last week, the dark movie with John...
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction. How old is it now?
It's 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was,
early 90s.
93.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I found that article, by the way.
You sent it to me.
Yep. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's the Vanity Fair. Yeah. It's the Vanity Fair article. Yeah, it's really good. 20-year retrospective of how they made Pulp Fiction.
All right.
Like, people killed each... We were going to kill each other to have those parts.
Some of them may have.
Some of them may have, right.
All right. Well, we are going to have the Technology Bites Geek Gathering here in Houston. If you are in the Houston area and you want to hang out with us, we'll be gathering at Cones.
2808 Mile at Drew. And you've got something up on the website,
I got something
right?
up at geekradio.com. You can go there to check out the information for the Geek Gathering. And we hope you come out and hang out with us, tip a few, and... just hang out. Just be geeks. You don't even have to be geeks. You just have to like to hang out with
people.
You
just have to like beer and wine.
Or darts. Or finger foods.
Or Priuses. Or Republicans.
Although they have a table set out back where the darts were. You can't really play darts in there.
You have to have nerves of steel.
That the people sitting there need to have
Right,
nerves.
That's right.
That's where Afflicted holds court back there.
It's back by the darts.
Well, it's when it's cold, yeah. Probably, you know, if it's not cold, then I don't have to.
And if any, food trucks want to come by.
Oh, goodness.
Except for those peanut butter and jelly.
Not
ones.
The peanut butter and jelly.
Peanut butter
truck.
Oh, jelly like truck.
Wow. I want the rice boxes. That's the one I want.
Everybody bring rice.
Showers with rice.
Some Uncle Ben's for you.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. And that's another episode. And hopefully we got it. Last week, the show is not available for podcast because the recording equipment failed.
Wow.
I noticed somebody saying during last week's show on Twitter that the stream wasn't, they weren't able to get
there. They weren't able
stream,
to get so. There, yeah. So hopefully this week we'll have better luck. All right, well, we're going to get out of here. You have been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Afflicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
See you Friday at the Geek Gathering.
Nuts.
Happy Birthday, Universal Pictures. Founded as the Universal Film Manufacturing Company in 1912, Universal Pictures has released countless iconic American movies over the past century. Throughout February, the Museum of Fine Arts Houston offers the singular experience of seeing some of the studio's considerable achievements on 35mm. The MFAH is privileged to participate in the national tour of this film series, presented in association with the UCLA Film and Television Archive. Information at www.mfah.org/films.
or call 713-639-7515. The February screenings are The Birds, To Kill a Mockingbird, All Quiet on the Western Front, Inglourious Basterds, Magnificent Obsession, Do the Right Thing, Showboat, Pillow Talk, Dracula, Frankenstein, Apollo 13, High Plains Drifter, and Cobra Woman.
Make your gift to KPFT go twice as far. Many employers sponsor corporate matching gift programs that will match any charitable contribution made by their employees. To increase the value of your gift, contact your human resources office to see if your company has a matching gift program and obtain the appropriate form. Follow the instructions on the form and mail it to KPFT, 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006. We'll verify your gift and notify your company. Your employer may also match your volunteer time. Ask your human resources office for eligibility requirements. Participating in your company's matching gift program is a simple yet powerful way to increase your support of KPFT without any additional cost to you. Don't delay. Get your company to match your gift to KPFT today. You are listening to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.